I don't know if you've heard about the boy who was hoping to be cast as Joseph in the church Christmas pageant, but he tried out for the part and his younger brother was cast as Joseph in his place, and he was made the innkeeper instead. And he was so angry about that that he kind of schemed through all the practices of how he might get his revenge. So on the night of the performance, Joseph and Mary made their entrance, and they knocked on the door of the inn. And the innkeeper kind of cracked the door open, and he eyed them coldly. And his brother, playing the part of Joseph, said, "Please, sir, can you give us lodging for the night?" And then he stepped back, expecting to be gruffly sent to the barn. Except the angry brother had been kind of planning this for weeks. And so he throws the door open. He says, "Of course we have room for you. You'll have the best room in my hotel." And he was kind of thrown for a second. Joseph was. And then he said, "Hold on just a minute, Mary." And he stuck his head in. He said, "I wouldn't let my wife stay in a dump like this. Come on, Mary, we're going to sleep in the barn." And everything got back on track like it was supposed to. You know, when it comes to Christmas sermons, you don't usually talk too much about the innkeeper, do you? But I think there are some pivotal lessons that we can learn this morning from a man that really we know very little about. Now, before we get to that, let me just ask you a question. What's on your list? We've been asking this for the last several weeks. What's on your list? When it comes to Christmas, what do you want? What are you hoping for? What is it that you need? What's most important to you? What's on your list? And we've talked about some things like everybody needs something to believe in, and everybody needs something to look forward to, and everyone needs something worth sharing in their lives. And today, everybody needs someone who cares. Everybody needs someone who will show care to them. Whether you lost somebody close to you this past year, or maybe you're kind of just lonely and sad during the holidays. Maybe you lost your job. Maybe you get bullied at school. Maybe your husband says he wants out of the marriage. Maybe you feel overworked and underappreciated on your job. You know, maybe you feel lousy and you're not even sure why. Maybe you're a sinner who needs some grace, and that's pretty much all of us. Everybody needs someone in their life who cares about them. Somebody who'll come alongside, kind of help us press on. One of the songs that we like to sing around here is called "Mighty to Save" by Hillsong United. And it begins, "Everyone needs compassion, a love that's never failing." And we do. We do need that. Now it says in 1 Peter 5:7, "Give all your worries and cares to God because he cares about you." And that's an amazing promise. I don't want to diminish that. That's the essence of Christmas, right? We are lost and hopeless without the Lord, absolutely. But God also created us to live in community, to love and to care for each other. The Old Testament book of Ecclesiastes says in chapter 4, verse 10, "If a man falls down, his friend can help him up, but pity the one who falls and has no one to help him up." Everybody needs someone who cares, someone to help him up. And I think that we can learn some important lessons about that from the Christmas story. Not the Daisy Red Rider BB Gun Christmas story, and not the Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Christmas story, but from the Christmas story. And before we dive into the text, I'm going to give you a little quiz this morning, okay? It's a Christmas quiz. I want to see how you do based on what the Bible actually says happened at Christ's birth. I know it's Christmas break. You've already taken finals if you're in school, so we'll keep this really easy. You can grade your own, and you don't have to post your grades anywhere, okay? Five questions, 20 points apiece. True or false? Number one, the Gospel of Luke tells us that Mary was pregnant when she rode a donkey from Nazareth to Bethlehem. That would be false. There's no mention of a donkey in the Bible. Sorry. All right. Number two, thanks for playing. Number two, the Gospel of Matthew says that three wise men visited the baby Jesus, each bearing a precious gift. That would be false. It doesn't say there were three wise men. It says there were three gifts. We don't know how many wise men that there were. Okay, number three. Matthew is the only book in the New Testament that quotes Joseph speaking to the angel. That's false. We don't get any words out of Joseph, right? He is obedient every time, but he never says anything. Are you noticing a pattern here to these questions? Three for three, false. Number four, both Joseph and Mary were told by the angel to name the baby Jesus. Okay, gotcha. That one's true. Okay, sorry. Had to mix it up a little bit. All right, number five. The innkeeper sent Mary and Joseph to the stable because there was no room for them in the inn. Well, that one's false because an innkeeper is not mentioned anywhere in Scripture. Okay, all the things that we assume we know about the Christmas story, it's kind of tricky because we get very, very little information. What the Bible actually says about the inn, the innkeeper, and all that is in one verse, Luke chapter 2, verse 7. Mary gave birth to her firstborn, a son. She wrapped him in cloths and placed him in a manger because there was no room for them in the inn. That's all we got. There was no room in the inn. Not a word about a grumpy innkeeper. No mention of the door being slammed in their faces. It just says there was no room. But having said that, most people agree that there was someone in charge of lodging at the inn when Mary and Joseph came to Bethlehem. Somehow it was communicated to them that things were full. Somehow they ended up in a situation where Mary had to lay her newborn baby in a manger. Now, does that mean it was actually a wooden trough with hay? Was it a stone receptacle of some sort that held hay? The word that's translated manger for all these years that we've talked about it being this little feed box, that same Greek word can mean an entire stall. So it could have been a cow stall that he was in and not actually a feed box. Now, speaking of a stall, were Mary and Joseph inside of a wooden barn? Were they in a cave, which was common in that day for barns? Were they out under the stars with a feeding trough right there? There's just so many things we don't know. And the truth is, those things don't really matter a whole lot, right? I mean, it's interesting. We're curious. It's in all the Christmas cards. But we don't know what the manger looked like. We don't know what the building was like. What we do know is that the inn was full. And somebody told them that there was no room. We presume it was an innkeeper. Now, the innkeeper has been sort of an interesting figure throughout history. While he's not directly mentioned in the Bible, there have been a lot of assumptions made about him, right? And we're going to talk about some of that this morning. We have to do a little speculating. And even though we don't know exactly what the innkeeper was like, there are some lessons and some truths that we can learn from him. What was the innkeeper like 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem? Well, what was the inn like 2,000 years ago in Bethlehem? For one thing, you can get out of your head any idea of a Holiday Inn, a Comfort Inn, or even a Red Roof Inn, okay? It was nothing like that at all. Any idea of a building that had internal rooms is not what this was. In ancient times, an inn as a place to stay typically was like a courtyard, and it was surrounded maybe by some rooms, some stalls, and everybody was kind of around the outside, and there might have been a fire pit in the center of the courtyard, maybe a well. And people and animals would kind of stay on the outside, and they would kind of come into the middle to do their cooking. They brought their own food. There was no opportunity for a restaurant or anything like that. Now, innkeepers had a pretty rough reputation in ancient times. These guys had to be tough because they would typically try to have a gate to keep anybody out except paying customers. And it was their responsibility to not only maintain order in their inn, but also to keep people safe. And so they had to be firm, tough, maybe even ruthless at times. You ever stay in one of those places where you go into the lobby and there's sort of bulletproof glass between you and the person that you're renting your room from? I've had to stay in a couple places like that. Not the warmest, most inviting places in the world, but compared to where Mary and Joseph were trying to stay, that was kind of the Ritz-Carlton, you know, those kinds of places. Nothing spectacular about this inn except for the couple who almost got to stay there but didn't. That's the only thing about this inn that would have given it any mark on the map at all. But there's no room. Right? And that brings us back to this mysterious, unnamed, unmentioned innkeeper. Was he the typical concierge of his day, kind of hard-nosed and tough and unyielding? The room is full. Who wants a pregnant woman to come in and stir things up? The stalls, everything's occupied. There's no sleeping bag. There's no cot. Just no room. Now, maybe that's how he was. Maybe he was cold, uncaring. That's the reputation he gets in a lot of stories. Remember in The Wizard of Oz, the guy that meets them at the gate of Oz and pokes his head out of the enchanted city and says, "Go away, you can't come in." You know, or maybe you remember in Lord of the Rings, they're trying to go into the city of Bree, and there's the guy at the gate who won't let them in. Or maybe Billy Crystal as Miracle Max in Princess Bride, you know, he slams the little door in their faces. No room, no, you can't come in, right? We often see this innkeeper as kind of the unsympathetic, inhospitable, unwilling guy. I mean, she's pregnant. Come on, let him in. Find a little spot somewhere. But no. And that may be true. You know, maybe he refused Mary and Joseph entrance because of the crowds and her being in labor, and that wouldn't be a very easy guest to accommodate. That's all possible. Maybe it's disappointing that he'd be that way, but it's possible. What did Ecclesiastes say? Pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. And maybe that's how Joseph felt. There's nobody here to give me a hand, right? Discouraged, isolated, vulnerable. Christmas isn't easy for everybody, is it? I have a friend who visited Alcatraz several years ago. He was not an inmate at Alcatraz, but you know, that's the federal penitentiary. It's abandoned now, and it's on the island there in San Francisco Bay. I've seen it from the mainland, but never been out there. But this guy said it was a fascinating place to visit. They learned on their tour that when new prisoners were brought there, the warden would say to them, "The world is now a better place because you are here." And they would be in this place that was, for all purposes, you were there till you died. Well, anyway, about 300 people lived on the island who were not inmates of the prison. They were families of people who worked there. About 60 to 80 kids at any one time was living there on the island. And there was a poster there on the wall, and my friend read this, and it was by a guy named Don Hurley. He spent 11 years there while he was growing up on the island. And he wrote this. He said, "An island tradition of the children was to go caroling each Christmas Eve. We would stop and sing a couple of carols outside the different parts of the prison. And then all the children would yell, 'Merry Christmas,' and within a few seconds, many would shout back the same." This same event would happen every year, Don said. "And every year I thought that our happiest night must have been their saddest." You know, even as a boy, he recognized the powerful emotion that surrounded Christmas. For some, it's the happiest day of the year. For others, it's the saddest. And you know, we often portray such a warm picture of a very beautiful Mary and a handsome Joseph, and their hair looks just right, and the makeup's pretty good, and the light shines in from the star, and the manger has nice fresh hay, and everything just looks so sanitized and so beautiful and so idyllic, you know. And we have this hindsight that we like to kind of pour into it, and it's just a happy, beautiful scene. But you know, if you've been through childbirth, it's pretty messy, and it's pretty hard, at least that's what I've been told, and you know, there's a lot of strain and stress, and if you're the husband who's never witnessed anything like that before, and you're helping deliver this baby into the world, that, oh, by the way, there's a little bit of pressure because he's God's son, you don't want to drop him, you know, and be that guy, right? I mean, this was a tough situation. There must have been moments where Mary and Joseph felt like the weight of the world were on their shoulders. And listen, it's possible that the innkeeper just added to their anxiety, right? He's kind of like Archie Bunker, Ebenezer Scrooge, and the Grinch all rolled into one. He could have been that guy, you know, the dirty wife beater t-shirt, you know, and the cigar in his mouth and just, you know, no room. He could have been that guy. But maybe just the opposite. Maybe the innkeeper was really a helpful and compassionate guy after all. Maybe he's gotten a bum rap all these years. If Mary and Joseph, listen, if they had access to the manger, doesn't it make sense that somebody gave them permission to be there? And if the courtyard of the inn, presumably where this stall, this manger would have been located, somebody must have said they could use it, otherwise they would not have had access. It's hard for me to imagine that they went trespassing on the night Jesus was born. The tabloids would have had a heyday with that, right? And think about this. If the shepherds were allowed to come in and see the baby, somebody had to let them come in. I wonder if maybe the innkeeper is kind of the hero of the story, at least to Mary and Joseph. Maybe he's the nicest guy they had come across since they got to town. Finally, somebody is understanding. Sorry. There's no room inside, but look, let me fix you up out here. And maybe he put some fresh hay out there. And maybe he had his wife boil some water. They always do that in the movies. I have no idea why. And you know, maybe he got them a clean blanket. And maybe he got them a couple of bowls of soup. You know, I mean, I don't know. But maybe he was the best thing that happened to them while they were there. And you know what? In the eternal scheme of things, it doesn't matter that much. You say, "Really, I came to church today to hear you speculate about all of this." I get that. I'm just pointing out that Mary and Joseph had a need, and he was in a very unique position to meet it. And wouldn't you like to have been that guy if you look back and you figured out later who was in your barn, and you know you did all you could? Everybody needs someone who cares, somebody who's going to show God's love in a tangible way. It's why Jesus told us to feed the hungry and to clothe the naked and to welcome strangers and to visit those who are sick or in prison. Because when we do that for other people, we're doing it for him. Everybody needs compassion, the kindness of a Savior. And so I've told you, if you've been here and heard me preach before, I always give you a bottom line. I want you to have some kind of central point, something to take home. Well, because it's Christmas, I'm feeling especially generous. I've got two bottom lines for you today, okay? I want to talk to two different groups of people. I want to say, first of all, to you, maybe for you, you know what? Things are going pretty well this Christmas, right? Your family's healthy, your job's secure, God is on the throne of your life. Now, I'm not saying life's perfect, but no complaints, you're doing pretty well. If that's you, then listen, bottom line today. Bottom line for you, be Jesus to someone who is hurting. You can be Jesus to somebody else. You know, one Christmas Eve when our kids were little, I pulled our van into a gas station after the Christmas Eve candlelight service at church. And instead of paying at the pump, I went inside. And there was this one lady in there, forlorn, stuck working on Christmas Eve. And I felt so bad for her. I came back out to the car, and I grabbed the kids, and we got a plate of cookies somebody had given us at church. We went back inside and gave her some cookies. You'd have thought we'd have given her $1 million. She was so excited about that the next year we made extra cookies, and we lived really close to an I-65 interchange, and we went into every gas station, every motel, every, you know, convenience store, and we took cookies into the workers at every place, our cute little kids, you know, and we really had a great time. Some of my favorite Christmas memories. And we did that for about 5 years, and then the kids get old enough that, you know, men walking in offering you cookies is a little creepy. I don't know. It just wasn't the same. So it kind of lost the pizzazz of little kids, you know, kind of on wide-eyed wonder on Christmas Eve. But man, beautiful memories of just some people who were kind of having a lousy time and brightening their day a little bit. Everybody can be Jesus to somebody. I'll tell you another one of my favorite memories. This was several years later, kind of when we were past the go to every little store, you know, with cookies. And we were going to run into this convenience store after the candlelight service, and we were going to grab some donuts for breakfast because we were getting up and driving 12 hours home the next morning. And so We pulled in, and there was a Trailways bus, and there were all these guys standing around smoking, looking like a pretty rough crowd. And we pulled up, and one of my kids said, "Man, this looks kind of intimidating," and I'm thinking, I agree with you. So I got out, I locked the door, you know, and I kind of nod to the guys as I go in, and they didn't look very pleasant or very, you know, friendly. And I go in to get our donuts. I came back out. You wouldn't believe the difference. I mean, they're like, "Hey, Merry Christmas, thanks, man, have a great night," and they're just all having a big time, you know. You know what made the difference? My wife, who I locked in the car, got out with a plate full of brownies and figured, you know what, being on a Trailways bus on Christmas Eve is probably not everybody's first choice. Maybe they'd like to have a snack for the road. And she was right. See, everybody needs somebody who cares, right? We all need somebody in our lives who's going to just be Jesus. And so I'm telling you, you can do that, okay? If things are going pretty well for you, be Jesus to somebody else. But let me say this. Maybe Christmas isn't going so well for you. Maybe you'd say, you know what, I'm not okay this year. Everything's going wrong. Maybe your heart's broken. Maybe you feel lonely or miserable. Maybe you're kind of dying inside. You know, maybe it's your job. Maybe it's your kids. Maybe it's finances, health. Maybe it's some addiction of some kind. You know, one of Elvis Presley's most popular songs was Blue Christmas, which I never understood when I was a kid. Red, green, blue, who cares? You know, but some of you understand a Blue Christmas really, really well. You know, if that's you, then the bottom line for you today is, you know what, have the humility to reach out for some help. Open up your heart enough to let somebody else in. God doesn't give extra credit for being tough, for sucking it up and acting like everything's okay. You know, it's not strength, that's pride. Just have the humility to reach out for some help. I read a story years ago. Charlene Bombich said she was what you might call a Christmas enthusiast. She found a lot of joy in the holidays, but she was having a really tough year. she had a major surgery that was coming right after Christmas, and she was dreading that, and she was just really not in the holiday spirit. So kind of on a whim, she thought, you know, it'll be fun. I'm going to go to one of those, you know, Santa Clauses at the mall. I mean, he's not the real Santa, but he works for the real one. And so anyway, I'm going to go get my picture made for my husband and my grown boys. That'd be kind of fun. So she went there to the mall, and she found a Santa who was available, and she asked if she could sit down next to him and have her picture taken. He said he'd be glad to, so she squeezed in for the picture. And after the picture, Mr. Claus said to Charlene, he asked what she wanted for Christmas. And she really didn't let her brain engage. She just blurted out, I'm having a hysterectomy next week. I'd like to heal quickly. And Santa kind of paused, and he looked her right in the eye. He said, Mrs. Claus and I will be praying for you. And she was kind of horrified by her own bluntness, and she just started to cry. It was just his tenderness and his interest in her as he spoke back. And she thanked him, and she started to walk away, and she turned around, and she said, you know, my baby's 25 years old, but you still come to my house every Christmas Eve. And he said, I know. I know. You know, you have to open yourself up a little bit, maybe even to somebody you don't know very well. And if there's somebody willing to be Jesus back, that's what we need, is to love each other. I had a guy in my office one day, not here, it was a few years ago, and he's just sobbing over his kids. And then he apologized for breaking down like that. Why do you have to apologize for that? What better thing to cry for than your kids? You know, it's just being vulnerable and being real. That's okay. It's okay. You know, I don't know what the innkeeper was like in Bethlehem on that night so long ago. I don't know if he was a man of compassion. I don't know if he was a jerk. I don't know. All I know is that he had an opportunity to minister to the mother and stepfather of our Lord and to baby Jesus himself. What an opportunity. So if you find yourself in the story somewhere, you have an opportunity to bless somebody, be Jesus to them, would you? And if you need to be honest enough to say, you know what, I need some help, I'm dying here, then have the humility to do that, because we're all in this together. I want to wrap up today by reading a story to you. I read this years ago. It was first published in Guidepost Magazine in 1966. The story's been around a long time. It's about a little kid named Wallace Perling. I don't know if it's true or not. I've heard the story told in different ways with a few different details, but Dinah Donahue wrote it this way, and to my knowledge, this was the first time it was ever published. This is what she wrote. Wallace Perling's performance in the annual production of the Christmas pageant in his small Midwestern town has slipped into the realm of legend. But the old-timers who were in the audience never tire of recalling exactly what happened. Wallace was 9 that year and in the second grade, though he should have been in the 4th. Most people knew he had difficulty keeping up. He was big and clumsy, kind of slow in movement, not real sharp. Still, Wallace was liked by the other kids in the class, all of whom were smaller than he was. Wallace was a helpful boy, always willing and smiling. Wallace hoped to be a shepherd in the Christmas pageant that year, but the play's director, Miss Lombard, assigned him the role of the innkeeper instead. After all, the innkeeper didn't have too many lines, and Wallace's size would make his refusal of lodging to Joseph more convincing. There's the stereotype again. And so it happened that the audience gathered for the yearly extravaganza of bathrobes and bedsheets, shepherd's crooks and kingly crowns, harps and halos. No one on stage or off was more caught up in the magic of the moment than was Wallace. Dinah said he stood in the wings and he watched the performance with such fascination that from time to time Miss Lombard had to make sure he didn't wander on stage before his cue. When the time came for Joseph to appear, he slowly and tenderly guided Mary toward the inn. Joseph knocked hard on the wooden door that was set into the painted backdrop. Wallace, the innkeeper, was waiting. "What do you want?" he demanded. "Sir, we seek lodging," Joseph said. "Seek it elsewhere. The inn is full." Wallace spoke vigorously, looking straight ahead. "But, sir, we've asked everywhere in vain. We've traveled far. We're weary." "There's no room for you here," Wallace said, looking appropriately stern. "Please, sir, this is my wife Mary. She's expecting a child and needs a place to rest. Surely you have some small corner for her." And for the first time, Wallace relaxed his stiff stance and he looked down at Mary. And with that, there was a long pause. No, be gone, the prompter whispered from the wings. No, be gone, Wallace repeated without much conviction. Joseph sadly put his arm around Mary and the two of them turned to go. However, Wallace did not go back inside the inn like he was supposed to. He stood in the doorway watching the couple, his brow creased in concern, tears welling up in his eyes. And suddenly in that small town, on that one silent night, this particular Christmas pageant became different than all the others. Wallace called out, "Wait, Joseph, don't go. Bring Mary back." And with a smile spreading across his face, he said, "You can have my room." And Donahue concluded the story this way. There were those in the audience that night who thought the pageant had been ruined. But there were others, many others, who thought it was the best Christmas pageant they'd ever seen. You know what? Everybody needs somebody who cares. And for some of you here this morning, you get to be that person. You get to be Jesus to somebody who's hurting. But for others of you here today, you need to let somebody in, because everybody needs somebody once in a while.